really deep gratitude for your practice here. And again, you know, it's really delightful to be here together, practicing together. A lot of appreciation, you know, flowing from both of us to all of you. And speaking on behalf of all three of us, you know, I think it's been a real delight to be sharing in this space. So I want to express a lot of appreciation to Zohar and Ella for, you know, putting in a lot of work and effort to make this so delightful. And a real deep bow to all of you for in your presence, you know, kind of turning this wheel of the Dharma together and keeping these practices alive, offering a lot of beautiful support to each other, and also receiving the support of each other. In that sense, that real turning of that wheel, you know, it's spoken of so beautifully in the teachings and practices. I remember at one point, I think Stephen Batchelor gave this lovely reflection. Stephen Batchelor is a really interesting Dharma teacher to listen to if you haven't already. He spoke about a path, how a path, you know, if you walk in the countryside, you know, these paths are there, and you kind of follow these paths. And they're made by other people walking these paths, you know, many of these kind of paths. Occasionally you'll come across a place where it's clearly that someone's had to, you know, spend a few days building a path. But there's a lot of paths in the world that are actually created just by other people having already walked there. You know, and so it's a beautiful sense that our practice is path making. Yeah, we're path makers. And we're keeping that path opened. And that's also really resonant with the Two Sorts of Thinking Sutta, you know, the kind of the ending section of it. We didn't read it together. But it has this sense of kind of discovering a path, and that path is kept clear, kept open by, you know, the so-called practices, you know, of other walkers, yeah, path walkers, path makers. So I just wanted to speak a little bit about the particulars of the paths that we've been walking on this retreat. This little reflection was coming to mind over the days. It's like, well, what is it that we're doing here? And you may remember those of you who were in the question session a couple of days ago, I think, you know, Zoe asked this question, are these, you know, kind of named two practices that we've done here, are they the same or are they different? You know, are they the same or are they different? And I would say all of the practices are different, but those differences can be subtle. It might be worth mentioning some of the subtleties there. You know, those of you who know your U2 lyrics will know there's this lyric somewhere there, you know, we are one, but we're not the same. Yeah, so all these practices are one, as in they all reduce dukkha. They all alleviate stress, distress, disharmony, entanglement. But they're not all the same in the way that they do that. So what I'm going to say now, it's not definitive, it's not exact, it's not, you know, kind of... it hasn't got footnotes, it's not something that I've, you know, thought a lot about and kind of gotten very precise. So with this, also really trust your experience. So if I'm kind of describing, oh, well, this is what can happen in, you know, this mode of practice, you know, see for yourself what happens when you're practicing in that way. I don't see that we're recording. Are we recording? I don't know. All of these practices reduce dukkha, but they don't remove all dukkha, yeah, all of the time. You know, that would be a complete absence of experience, what's called a cessation, yeah. So if something's still around, right, then something's going on, right? So it hasn't completely removed all dukkha. You know, the nibbana, this experience that's not an experience, we kind of touched on a few times. And so we're actually not just talking about the absence of a phenomena here, Right, so that can happen, like, oh, this thing that I was paying attention to, this pain in the body, this sound, that disappears. When there's still some subtle dukkha around, like when something is there, yeah? So when we're talking about a cessation, we're also talking about the cessation of space. Like not just the empty space, oh, this thing isn't here, there's just space. Okay, that's still a thing. We're also thinking, oh, there's just kind of time passing, there's still a sense of time. Yeah, so if there's a sense of time, well, the Buddha would say there's still a subtle dukkha there, there's still a subtle attachment to something, yeah. Even awareness as we normally experience it, right, isn't occurring in this space. So just kind of setting the bar, you know, nice and high, okay? So there's still a subtle dukkha, there's still a little bit of work to do in the exploration, if we want to, yeah? As an aside here, you know, we spoke yesterday about how concepts create percepts, you know? So the ideas behind, oh, what this is, will create our experience. As we practice in the Dharma, and this is kind of a general helpful point, though it's a side point to what I'm explaining now, what we conceive of as dukkha will shape what we release through our practices. What we conceive of as dukkha will shape our Dharma, it will shape our path, it will shape the paths we choose to walk on, and it will shape the kind of release and relief that we experience. Yeah, they dependently co-arise. Okay, so useful point, not quite accurate or cromulent or the right way on this particular path at this time. So what remains, okay, in sense of time, in sense of space, in sense of phenomena, in sense of shapes of awareness, will be specific according to the practices that we do. That's my experience, maybe yours as well. So we start off with just mindfulness. You know, could say, you know, in normal terms like this, you know, coming online. It's like, oh, I'm here, I'm present, you know, suddenly, wow, what's here? The absence of presence, yeah, or just absence, we could say, sometimes also called ignorance, yeah, or being detached, not being connected, leads to habitual modes that push and pull on phenomena more and more. A very gross activity there. And noticing more over time lessens those habitual patterns, yeah, that can just unfold and get us more and more into entanglements. Kind of an attentional blinkered, not seeing so clearly. Yeah. The outcome of that, I think many of us will notice, more mindfulness, more presence, and particularly over time, it kind of brightens, clarifies, brings alive the phenomena that we're paying attention to. Yeah, it's like some layers of dust and cloudiness kind of disappear from the experience. It's like, ah, the vividity, the beauty, the aliveness of experience comes more and more into the fore. Yeah. Next practice that we tune into, this kind of this metta practice. Yeah, purposefully cultivating the openness of the heart, the kindness. And we see that more kindness replaces the kind of demanding atmospheres that we can have. Yeah, when we don't feel able to be kind, we get quite demanding on life. Yeah, oh, it should be this way, it should be that way. And as the kindness comes, those need for it to be this way or that way starts to soften. Yeah, and we could say that metta is not tanha. Okay, so metta, kindness, is not tanha, demanding. Also, we said push-pull for this, yeah? We could even go further. We could say that metta is not just not tanha, it's actually antimatter to tanha. It kind of eats up tanha, yeah? They pull, pull, and metta kind of remains, expands, opens the heart. And furthermore, if you want to really go deep into this exploration, I think that metta is incredibly deep, not just lovey-dovey stuff that helps us do our practice, incredibly deep in terms of the emptiness teachings, you know, how it's empty. In the Dharma, they speak about this-that conditionality. When this is, that is. Okay, so when dukkha is, tanha is. Yeah, and so then the follow-up to that is that when this isn't, that isn't. when tanha isn't, dukkha isn't. When dukkha isn't, tanha isn't. You know, this, that conditionality. And so the relational quality of not dukkha, you know, is that. It's like, oh, there's not so much dukkha when there's more metta. Yeah. In any time, helpful to kind of remember, the opening of the heart in metta is a sign that practice is going well. So whatever practice you're doing, if more metta starts to come through, it's a good sign. So, that's a good practice for me. It's doing things, it's shifting things. So maybe more mindfulness brings more metta. Whatever practices is we're doing. So, the heart's opening, the kindness is coming forwards. But there's also a this, that conditionality that says from the arising of this comes the arising of that. You see, it has a kind of sequence in time. The other way we could say it's synchronic. It happens at the same time. Less than that disappears in the moment, in the very moment. But also, we can see more metta practice leads to less dukkha in time, over time. Just kind of folds forwards, leans forwards. Doesn't create the conditions for future arisings of demanding. Yeah, because it soothes something in the being deeply. Another practice that we were diving into is a relaxing contraction, whether that's kind of relaxing it through the body, yeah, relaxing tension. And then we see that contraction is a representation, is a presentation of dukkha. And then we can actually go even further than relaxation. It's actually going into this kind of longer breathing or a wider attentional field of listening. And we're kind of not just relaxing contraction, kind of opening the space, inviting to open, allowing to expand more and more. And in my experience, this seems to tend us towards a more peaceful state of less dukkha. Yeah, kind of like a real absence of dukkha more than anything else, yeah? So, beautiful. Much more could be said, but I'll try and keep myself brief. In the dukkha way of looking, which we were doing more, kind of noticing this is unsatisfactory or saying this is not peaceful, you know, have some subtle differences in there. Saying this is not peaceful, yeah, tends us towards more peace, in my experience. This isn't peaceful. There is a peacefulness possible, and I release the push and the pull, and it kind of opens into a peacefulness. Interestingly for me, and other people have reported the same, saying something like, this is unsatisfactory. Well, that sense, this can't satisfy. This can't bring satisfaction. It tends to satisfy, yeah? That kind of subtle or even quite profound joy in relationship and in the body, heart, mind. Yeah. So curiously, by saying this won't make me happy, dropping it, get a little bit more happy. Yeah. Seems counterintuitive, but then it also kind of makes a kind of rational, logical sense. Yeah. Dropping that need, that thirsting, if I get this, then I'll be happy. And say, if I drop that sense that I need to get this or get rid of that, to be happy, boom. The happiness that I was kind of putting in reserve, it's like a shortcut on the path. So the long path, get rid of, look after, maintain, don't get anyone else to get it, you know, leads actually to dukkha. It's kind of a loop. You cut off the loop, boom. Move the next step into the happiness that we thought would be arrived at, but actually we never reach. Again, you know, we have the equanimity, the wide open awareness practices we were doing yesterday. They also tend towards the peaceful. But I feel there's a subtlety in these which we can really explore and tune into, that it's a peacefulness that also can, maybe there's kind of slightly extra ingredients that I'm not fully explaining at this point, bring a kind of a vibrancy in the tranquility in that peacefulness. There's that kind of showing up, and it's the accumulation of the other illimitable heart qualities within the equanimity, yeah, which is really kind of clear there, and it brings this vibrancy, brings this aliveness into the peacefulness. You're going to feel this in the energetics of the body. You might feel this in the sense of the space. There's a real kind of showing up in there, and this can also happen. You know, kind of depends on a lot of things. You know, how our energy is showing up at any time. That it's possible in all of those practices, perhaps. But something I've particularly noticed there. And the final point to say about these is then you bring more attention on any of these qualities, they will expand. Yeah? And expand in every possible way. Yeah? So maybe they'll expand in terms of like filling more of the body sense. Yeah? Growing, developing. They'll also expand in the sense of adding dimensionality. This is actually something quite interesting to explore as we go forwards in our practice, maybe. It's like, maybe there's also a flavor here. Yeah, it's not just a physical sensation, it's actually like a taste to this experience, and I add that dimensionality. Perhaps there's just more definitions within it, more subtleties to explore, to sense into. Yeah. So expand can mean many things. Or we could say it deepens. Our perspective on this, our sense of this deepens. And so any of these qualities, vibrant tranquility, peacefulness, joy, yeah, can really be developed and absorb the attention, absorb us into really deep states of collectedness, of unification, of gatheredness, of samadhi. So you know, all of that's there, and we can kind of open to that in so many ways. What it comes down to for us as we go forwards is like, what is it you want to develop? Yeah. So speaking about metta as being a potential goal of the practice, being a potential practice indicator, practice is going well, there's more metta. And also being a practice in and of itself. Yeah, just practicing metta can be a beautiful practice. The question then comes to us is like, well, what is it we want to practice? What's the goal of our practice? What do we want to develop? What do we want to bring into being? What's our intentions? Another way of asking this question could be, what do you value? What do you value? Or another way of saying it is, what would you like to see more of in the world? Yeah. So that's, for me, something very simple might be kindness. I value kindness. I'd like to see more kindness in the world. And then I can question, so when I'm practicing, am I very harsh on myself? And am I thinking, being more harsh on myself so that my practice gets better, is that going to make me more kind? When someone, including myself, is harsh to me, does that bring more kindness into the world? So does my practice represent the kind of qualities I want to bring into being? Yeah. And then we can look back over the practices that we do, or the practices that we're good at, yeah, are they actually supporting the goal for me? So the goal, the path, the practice co-arise from our intentionality, and hopefully let's get them in tune with what we really value. So that our dharma, our sense of dukkha, yeah, what we wish to bring down the levels of in our practice, that they're really in tune with that. We want more patience, let's practice patience. You want more love, you want more kindness, practice those. You want more discernment, you know, practice in those ways. What do you feel the world's missing? Can you be ready to embody that ingredient? So one way of looking at meditation is it's cultivation. It's the planting of seeds, and it's the supporting those to grow. Yeah. What is it you want to cultivate? Speak a little bit about transitioning. So I mentioned early on this, you know, blowing up of the balloon of our kind of intentional practice, and then seeing if we can bring whatever we inflated in the walking into the sitting, and from the sitting into the walking, and just keeping that going. And so one of the phrases that's used in the teachings at times is, you know, when you end a meditation, don't come out all the way. You know, if you've developed a beautiful quality of heart and mind, don't just kind of, bell's rung, I'll just throw that away. It's like, carry that with me. Support it, breathe with it, stand up with it, walk it to the door, carry it outside, envelop myself within it. Yeah. Same thing with a retreat. Whatever you've developed here, support it to stay, sustain for as long as you can. And so what sustains that? In our experience, going slowly. Yeah. So if you remember anything from this kind of flurry of words and ideas, and I'm recording it, we're recording it, we can listen back if it feels worth it. But you could just remember this one. Go slow. Or at least go a little slower. Yeah. So if we were going to go, you know, so fast, just go a little bit slower. And then every so often, don't forget to breathe into the balloon. Yeah. Like it will deflate by itself. Yeah. And we're not looking to pinch it hard, keep it forever. We want it to be alive. Yeah. And sometimes maybe we need to inhale from the balloon. Yeah. So one of these questions in life, you know, is, I got this really good insight. Maybe I could kind of just open that out and live as if it's real right now. Oh, this is unsatisfactory. I tried that in the meditation. It was really helpful. And now I can try it here. There's also an idea I found really useful in my life is giving life experiences a little conversion, yeah, a little upgrade. So many times in our life, things don't happen on time. Yeah. Now you might be one of those people who's always late for everything. And so maybe, you know, you don't get to notice that. But if you arrive on time for things, you'll notice they tend not to happen on time, you know. Or sometimes we get somewhere early, or we get somewhere, something's cancelled, or, you know, even if you you can end up in a queue at things, you know, the local health food shop now, so there's only one person inside at a time, so, you know, you end up standing outside of it for a while. Sometimes you have a nice conversation, sometimes you're there alone, sometimes you already looked at all the fruit and vegetables that are outside, there doesn't seem to be anything else to do. And then, so this is the perfect time for conversion. Ah, meditation. An extra meditation. And meditation's good, and you like it. So what is it that you can do there? So we know, you know, all of the postures are available for meditation. So here I am standing. And we have this with phrase that to knock, to put around any experience, yeah. So there's standing meditation. But there's also this beautiful version called standing around meditation. Yeah, you can just, I'm just standing around. Well, I may as well make this a meditation, a cultivation, plant some seeds, some intentionality. Make this in tune with what I value. And so you can do walking meditation, and you can also do walking around meditation. Yeah, sitting around meditation. And of course, everybody's favorite, lying around meditation. All those people just lying around. I'm sure they're all meditating. On the beach. Just lazing in a field. So really including that, expanding the range. Yeah. And so, you know, we can also switch over things that we're already doing in our life. So it's great to have a daily life practice. And, you know, it'd be lovely to sit as much as we've been sitting here, to walk mindfully as much as we've been walking here. But maybe to get the most, and I do think you know, a few little extra moments through our life, through our day, sorry, will increase the attentional qualities and the meditative beauties of our life. So say, you know, every time I do a regular task, like take a sip of water, could that become like a meditation? So, that sip, mindful, present, kind. Or every time I brush my teeth, which is actually an act of kindness for the teeth, yeah? So, I love my teeth. May you be happy. May you be well. May you be gently, tenderly cleaned, yeah? Or every time we wash our hands, you know, may I do this for the well-being of all beings. May everyone be safe and well. And so these little conversions can be really, really powerful, really, really helpful. If we are interested in setting up a daily life practice, you know, and it's really good to do that, just keep checking in with your experience. See how much time you can dedicate to practice. Make it sustainable. You know, it's very easy in this moment to be over ambitious and think, yeah, four times a day sounds about right. You know, really make it doable. You can always extend it, yeah. Maybe you want to start with something quite ambitious at first. You know, see for yourself. You know, we all have our own kind of personalities. I think it's an interesting exploration for us is to see, is like, you know, do I practice in all the postures? Going to be something particularly for people who've practiced for a while. If all of your meditations only ever happen in one sitting posture, then do you imagine that's going to be good enough to awaken in all of your life? It's just kind of an open question. I'm not creating an argument here. Like, maybe it is. Maybe it is. Like, but if you never stand and meditate, or not even standing around and meditate, there's a whole range of experiences we can tune into there. The postures matter. Yeah, we spoke about it before. Bodily fabrication matters. Do we practice lying down? Yeah. In our daily life, do we practice walking meditation? Explore those unique flavors. Yeah. So we have this whole range of spices and recipes that we can put into place and have different meals. You know, we tend not to always eat the same thing. So maybe our meditation can be like that as well. It's another thing to be aware of as we transition is the wise consumption. Yeah, wise consumption, what I consume. So today, as we kind of step out of the boundaries of retreat, maybe, you know, there's going to be a backlog of emails to connect with. And you can really just ask yourself, do I need to check my email? You know, or am I just going to check it because, you know, that's what I do. I'm an email checker, you know. And if you don't need to check it, then maybe it would be more supportive to transition without additional inputs that may or may not get stressful. Yeah. If you do need to check it, how about making it also a practice? So we speak about anything can become a practice. Just speak just a couple of minutes about this. Set a clear intention. Set a clear intention. What is it I want to do? Okay, so I want to find out how, you know, Bob is. Is Bob okay? You know, that's my intention with this email practice. And if I hear from Bob, I'm going to send him metta. You know, nice message. No matter what Bob says to me, you know. And Bob's a nice person, I'm sure. It'll be a nice thing, but maybe not. That's my intention. And I want to see, can I do that as a practice? Now, going on devices that have notifications and give me information about things I didn't want to know, it's really worth setting a timer for this particular practice. Yeah, just like you would set a timer for your meditation. So this is a maximum kind of timer. So, okay, I need 5 minutes maximum to check if I've had a message from Bob and to send back a loving message to Bob either way. Okay, set the timer for 5 minutes. 5 minutes, timer goes off, and I'm thinking, why have I set, what's that timer for? I can't remember setting a timer because I've gotten absorbed into some other things on my device. I would recommend putting the timer on the other side of the room, you know, if you can, so that you have to walk over there, and on the way over there thinking, I can't remember why I've set a timer. I can't think what I would have, oh, hang on, I'm lost, I'm not present. So we then turn off the timer and we can just check, so how did that go? Maybe it went really well, maybe it didn't go really well. So just watching that whole way that we do our engagement with the life. Yeah. So I really wish you well with this, you know, development of the practices. Maybe we want to expand the range into other areas. Maybe we want to keep practicing with some of the practices that we've been doing here and go back, listen to the guided recordings. If you want to read more, you know, you can keep accessing the notice board and on the website. If you search around, you'll find all of the resources that we shared are actually on a resources page. I think it's under practice if you look at the top heading of the website. And you can keep visiting back at that website if you like. There's quite a lot of beautiful things there. And from there, you can also choose if you want to join up with some of the places where we are offering ongoing practice. So some people mentioned maybe wanting to meet up and practice more around these practices. So we have on the third Sunday of the month, an online drop-in group called Shaping the World, where we can talk about, you know, how our practice is going, how we're bringing, you know, deep understandings and not so deep understandings of dependent origination into our experience, how we're co-creating our experience, yeah, and how that shapes how the world appears to us. Something very, very deep and profound. It's like, when there's more love in the heart, how does the world appear? When there's more peace in the heart, how does the world appear? Not the same as when there's anger, when there's distress. So in this way, as we practice, we shape the way the world appears. And so that's a monthly group you can join. There's also a group specifically about emptiness teachings in the style that Rob Bebea brought in. There's also the online Dharma Hall, where Zara Ella and myself are often leading sessions. We might be actually the most frequently there offering sessions, most regularly there. And there's a link to that on the notice board now. Something I'd just like to specifically mention is Sangha Seva, which is an organization that Zara and I and some other friends created quite some years ago to bring together meditation, presence, with positive actions in the world. And it's such a beautiful harmonization of cultivation qualities of meditation with also really making a difference to how others live their lives. So at the moment we're primarily running a retreat called Sacred Places, where we'll join together for a meditation, for a stillness gathering, sharing of intentions early in the morning, and then we actually head out and do, you know, quite a significant positive action at this time, which is cleaning up the litter that, you know, it's kind of gathering into the hedgerows, finding its ways into the rivers, and eventually, you know, making its way into the ocean if we're not careful. Yeah. And so, don't want to say too much about it, but I would say picking up litter is one of the really surprisingly enjoyable activities of a human life. Yeah. In short, if you walk past a piece of litter, oh, I'm too busy to pick that up. Yeah, we disempower ourselves. We say, oh, our litter, it's just everywhere. It's not my litter. And if we just stop and we say, I'm going to pick that up for nature, for all the beings of this world, it's empowering in such an incredible way. It's an act of love. It's an act of compassion. It's an act of care. And it feels so good that now I'm addicted to litter picking. And, you know, it's one of those addictions I don't think you need to be ashamed of. You know, you see a piece of litter, you pick it up and you feel so nice. And I always used to think, it's like, oh, it's someone else's rubbish. I shouldn't be picking that up. That's not for me. You know, it's not mine. And, you know, one of my really inspiring beings in my life, you could say a teacher for me, is a very religious Hindu man who leads our Himalayan yatra. It's like a trekking retreat in the mountain. And he would always say, Jai Ma, victory to the goddess, each time he picks up a wrapper from the floor. And I never really understood it until I started doing it more regularly. And so that's an offering. You can come to sacred places and join us. There'll be one. It's on the notice board. It says when it is. It's the beginning of July. I think the last thing I want to say, in addition again to a really deep bow to all of you and your practices, is a lot of respect to Rob Bebeya and what he has offered and created and developed. And I feel like, you know, we were honored to found Sanghasewa, which is what I was just speaking about, with him, and also, you know, what depth and brilliance he brought through his teachings. I really feel like we inherited a lot from him, inspired a lot by him. So yeah, deep gratitude to all of you, and deep gratitude to all beings who keep turning this Dharma wheel, keep expanding and walking this Dharma path. And let's stay in touch. It's always lovely to hear from you. And it'll be lovely to continue to sense you out there doing your practice in our hearts. And maybe that's just the last thing I'll say, is actually, if you feel like you're ever practicing alone, yeah, it's like, oh, I have to practice on my own. You're never alone. There's probably actually someone sending you metta right now. Yeah, like really, right now, there's probably someone sending us metta. There's people radiating metta to all beings. You know, there's so many people doing that practice. It's almost certain that right now we're being radiated in, you know, just washed in it. So, and you know, and you can also remember these beings that you shared this retreat with whenever you feel alone. Ah, yeah, maybe they're there practicing. So, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.